I can bench, just say, 150 pounds, and Bryce can bench 250 pounds, but I'm 20 miles an hour faster than him, him getting stronger on the bench is not going to help at all his golf speeds. He has to figure out what else is there. And that's where, like, I'm proud to say, for breaking the world record for ball and club speed, I've set that base of, hey, here's this base of strength. If you're stronger than me in the gym, there is no reason that you should be trying to get stronger in the gym to swing faster, because clearly you don't need that to even break the world records.
This is The Tournament Code.
Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Sam and Bryce. I've talked with you guys offline before about speed toad, but and just speed training in general. So I'm excited to get to talk with you guys for the podcast. Before we get going, normally do a PupView Books opening tee shot today. We're not going to do the opening tee shot trivia question because Jack isn't here, and frankly, he always gets the questions lined up for me. So instead, we're just going to make sure to remind people that if you're playing in tournaments this summer, to be buying a PupView Books as your yardage book for you. We've used them all summer, and we use them all the time whenever we're playing in events. It helps us, and we didn't do that back in college. We didn't do that back in high school, really. And then after college, started using them, and we thought, man, how do we ever get along without using a PupView book? So make sure to get a hold of them. Buy a few. They have plenty of programs, especially if you're a junior or a college player who's competitive. Reach out to them. They have lots of programs that you could enter into and help support you in that. So now that I've talked about that, let's talk about speed toad. I don't know if a lot of people have heard of it. I think it's going to be hitting the mainstream here. If it hasn't hit the mainstream, I think it will be in the next 6 months to a year. So why don't we start with Sam, why don't you go first, and then Bryce, you go as well. Describe the speed toad, its genesis, etc., and then we'll get more into it.
Speed toad is a speed trainer that allows you to speed train with your own shaft. So it originally came about, Bryce and I were in the long drive game, actually met online, invited a stranger to my house to train with me, and he showed up, and both of us didn't get murdered. So that was always a good thing. But we trained for a really long period of time together, and we were using all the different training aids in the book, speed sticks, Staxis, you know, all the different ones. And we get really, really fast with our training aids, but our drivers would only get like a little bit faster. And what we realized is there was a disconnect between gaining speed with speed training aids, gaining speed with driver. We found out that that was in the shaft and the importance of timing your own shaft. So in efforts to get better at long drive and just get a competitive advantage, what we did was create basically a speed toad, a bunch of different prototypes of that, which is it's a lighter tool that attaches to your own driver shaft. And we were swinging that. And we started gaining a lot more speed, started getting a lot more better, started getting other people noticing us. We didn't tell anyone because we wanted the competitive advantage. It wasn't supposed to be a business or anything. And all of a sudden, we started going really, really fast. And Bryce ended up at 226 miles per hour of ball speed. And I ended up breaking the world record at 245 miles per hour ball speed. And then we said, you know what? I think we need to start selling this because this really works. Bryce, kick it in there.
That's pretty much the gist of it. You know, when you do something, and you mentioned it earlier about like the niche of speed training, when you do something so extreme, and you, me and Sam are very detailed guys, and when you track things so minute, and you go to those speed extremes, you find the littlest of nuances that actually make big differences versus if you just kind of casually do something, whether that's in golf or life. When you really get into the nitty gritty, you realize what does and doesn't make differences. Because you're tracking half a mile an hour, you know, or half a degree of dynamic loft and what that does to ball speed. And so as we were tracking things so closely and trying to inch just another mile an hour, that's to Sam's point when we realized that how big of a difference that, you know, golfers, elite golfers, college golfers, they know how important the timing is at the top and how important the release is into the impact of the ball, both for accuracy and efficient speed. And so when we were tracking things so minutely, we're like, holy smokes, when we use these tools, and most of them are stiff as boards, you know, those shafts that you buy that are attached on, they're really, really stiff. You know, that's when we realized the timing of our driver shafts versus a training aid that's a stiff stick is a huge difference in translating speed training speed to your actual golf game with your driver in hand and hitting a golf ball.
100%. Yeah, I think that's been my experience. For the listeners' background, one of our buddies, Ashton, who is on Korn Ferry, actually has a medical for a little bit. So he'll be back next season after since he's had his surgery. But it just texted me, hey, you should check out Speed Toad. I checked it out. It was very interesting in terms of just the concept. My buddy was like, here's what he said to me about it was, you know, he thought that it was going to be pretty significant, but he can't swing right now. He has had hip surgery. So I reached out to Bryce and Sam. I just wanted to learn more about the product because there's lots of training products out there for swing speed. There's the one we've had, two of the main ones on the, if I was going to try to classify the main ones, you have Speed Sticks, Rip Stick, and Stack. Those are probably the three main like training aids out there. We've had Rip and Stack, the creators of those, on. Didn't do Speed Sticks just because at least right now there wasn't anything. After we'd already had Stack and Rip Stick on, I didn't think there was anything new that could be added to the commentary on it. As far as our work goes, I thought it might be repetitive to have Speed Sticks on. So when we evaluate who comes on and what we're going to talk about, part of what we think about is this going to be repetitive? Is this going to break new ground, especially in something as niche as speed training? And so I talked with Bryce about how it worked, and his explanation of it made sense to me. But then I decided to try it out as well. And for background, for those of you listening, again, we have our normal podcast. You're listening on audio, probably listen to us. You might not even see our YouTube page. On YouTube, I'm doing a road to 130 miles per hour where I'm going to give away, if I don't get to 130 miles per hour driver clubhead speed by the end of the year, I'm going to give away $1,000 to a random listener. If you watch the first video on YouTube, it'll explain how to do it. If you find us on Twitter or Instagram, it'll explain it. But I'm a little bit ahead in terms of production, so I don't know when this is going to come out to where my production is week-wise, but I'll give away some of it. I was at, to start off the year, is at 118.9, which I'm 6'3", 205, can dunk a basketball. It's probably not my maximum. That's probably not my ceiling, I would think. I've always struggled finding out how to get good speed. I've used the training implements. And the first week of just normal training without Speed Toad, I got to 120.8 and then kind of just, and my speed training at that time included the stack system, but also I think the big driver was actually hitting golf balls, like swinging a driver, figuring out how to get it going faster. I did a little bit too much of that, didn't rest at all, got injured. And so for 6 weeks, I didn't do anything. I came back week seven, did my first driver 120 point, or did my first driver session 120.9, felt pretty good about it. And then the next week, I implemented Speed Toad. And the first session with Speed Toad, I think I gained 2 miles per hour because, you know, you do the actual swing of the Speed Toad and then you're actually hitting. I hit a few golf balls afterward, not many, like 5 or 6, and immediately saw a jump. And then same thing the next session, I got it to 123.8 or 123.7. And then this Tuesday, so my third session, I picked up another 0.2 miles per hour. So it's been I can testify at least to how well I think it works. And I'm not going to hold a monologue on it, though there will be plenty more times I talk about my experience with it just because of what I've seen with the other implements. In terms of training with it, why don't you guys describe what the training protocol is like? I've obviously used it, but tell us about how that training protocol came about and the rationale for it.
My background, actually, I have a master's in exercise science and a doctorate in natural medicine. And I did a dissertation on cold lasers boosting human performance through nervous system activation. So my background outside of golf is kind of in the nervous system and how the nervous system operates. And for those of you that don't know, nervous system controls all muscular movements in your body. So it's controlling how fast your muscles are actually firing. So if your nervous system is not optimally trained, you can be as strong as possible, but your muscles aren't going to be able to move fast and they're not going to be able to be efficient. So that's where kind of the Speed Toad aspect came in, is it's a nervous system trainer. And one thing that we're different from all the other training aids is we're the only training aid on the market that does not have an overweight option. We only have an underweight option, and we do have a middleweight option, which is your actual driver. So we use your real driver in training. but we don't have anything overweight. There's a couple reasons for that. We can get into that a little bit later, but that's why we started training with underweight stuff, is because you need to get your nervous system moving faster in order to get the driver moving faster. Similar to how Olympic sprinters sprint down hills instead of sprinting with a parachute on them. They changed that in recent times.
Yeah. And in terms of the program, you had mentioned that, you know, you got a little ambitious and maybe did a little bit too much speed training and unfortunately put you on the shelf. In our years of doing it, we also did too much too often. And then we did, you know, maybe not enough. And we found that, you know, logically, if you think, if we need to push our 100% speed ceiling, the fastest we've ever swung in our life, well, we have to be 100% recovered and rested for that. So, you know, we tried years ago, we tried speed training 4, 5, 6 times a week in some capacity, heavy days, light days. And what we found was every day we were suboptimal. We were 90, 95% recovered. And we were swinging 90, 95% our ceiling. We couldn't break through the ceilings. And so one of the things, the most common thing emails we get is someone gets 2, 3 weeks into our program and they're like, hey, I have had awesome progress so far, but I'm only going twice a week. What can I do 3, 4 times a week? And we're like, no, that's on purpose because, again, we need to make sure we're fully recovered and rested. And you've probably, you know, recognized that it's not a lot of swings. And it's not a lot of times per week, but that's by design to maximize rest and recovery, to maximize speed progress. And obviously, we want to stay healthy, too. And that kind of delves into, you know, no heavy overweight options. But that's how we landed on the program that's on the app that customers get, you know, lifetime access to. And again, it's not a lot of workload. We like to think that we're working smart, not working hard kind of thing.
Yeah, it's incredibly manageable. And what I like about it, I don't know if I'm supposed to do it like this, but with 2 days a week, it means that, like, for example, I did Tuesday of this week. And then I know Friday and Saturday, I'm going to be doing manual labor all day. I'm working out on my property both those days. So my session this week is going to be on Thursday before that. Because if I do it on Saturday, I'm going to be dead tired. I won't be able to actually move fast. And so the ability to have that, the flexibility with it, and also it does not take, I love how little time it takes, but that you still see results in my experience. It's just been very neat to see. And I think the other thing, talking about the lighter implements, again, I'm going off my experience. I promised to ask questions in a little bit.
Love it.
The thing that's been interesting is you mentioned getting faster with implements. So I had speed sticks when they first came out early on, and I also had Stack, and with speed sticks, I used them for a while, but I had lots of other things going on. It took time, especially. It was just like a really long program, and you also had to cart a bunch of speed sticks around everywhere. That was the other limiting factor. The Stack, used that for a while, and I gained probably some speed from it. It was hard to tell because of how hard it was for me to keep up with the schedule with various things going on. But also, I would get good at swinging the Stack fast, but not necessarily transferring that to the club. And that, obviously, we like Sasha and Marty, we've had them on, so that could be issues with me. But the general takeaway I had from it, especially, or what I've had in this experience, is one, with the Stack, I was not very good. Like, my heavy speeds, I was good at. My light speeds, I wasn't very good at. So I'd get, like, my heavy speed, I'd call it like 103, 104 above. I was in like 98th percentile relative to my E speeds, I think. And then my 195 gram, I was pretty good. Sometimes I could push it into the like mid 120s E speeds, but I'm actually swinging 113, and then we're estimating what my speed would be with the driver. And then, so it's like 113, 114. And then with the overweight system or the underweight system, whatever weight that was, usually I was looking a couple miles per hour, maybe faster than my 195. So even like 140 grams, I was swinging it at like 115, 116. And it was just not, and I couldn't figure out what that disconnect was, why I couldn't swing it any faster. And in part, when I talked to them about it, they said it might be like my ability to time with that lightweight. And that was the interesting thing immediately with the, using my own driver shaft with the speed toad, was intuitive how to load and how to use that timing, where all of a sudden, like, takes you like a few swings. You're like, okay, I see how I'm actually creating speed, and it's translating over directly to driver. So that with my, once I plug on my driver, go through the training. Like recently, I got my driver speed to 125 miles per hour a couple times. Like, okay, sweet. Like, I can actually, I know I can swing the implement at this level. I'm not estimating it. I know I can swing it at this level. Now it's about making contact with the ball on any part of the face while I do it at that speed. When it comes to like the training and how you came, how you decided to only have underweight, what was rationale on underweight versus having the overweight options, which every single one has had up to, of those three that I mentioned, all three of them have overweight options?
Yeah, so there's three big reasons for that, and I'll touch on them loosely, and then Bryce can jump in with anything I missed out. One of them is just what you were talking about with being really fast with the tool, but not with your driver, and that's technique. Is anytime you swing anything heavier, you're going to be rewarded speed-wise for using bigger muscles and coming over the top. So like we were training with different tools like speed stick, stack, things like that. Whenever you're swinging with something heavy, if you throw it over the top, you start muscling it, you start swinging it almost like a sledgehammer, it's going to be a lot faster than when you actually drop it in the slot and swing it smooth and swing it with speed in the correct spot. So when you're not really sure of this and your only goal is to swing that tool faster, the only feedback you have on if that's a good swing or not good swing is that radar. So as that radar starts climbing up, you're going, that was a good swing. That was a great swing. Let me do it again and again and again. All of a sudden, you're ingraining these really bad habits, and now you're not getting faster with your driver. So one reason is technique. It encourages poor technique. Second reason is injury risk. So we were swinging the heavy stuff, hurting ourselves, and going, what the heck is going on? So that's when we started diving into the science of it and figuring out torque. So torque is rotational force. Every swing, you create rotational force, which in part puts force back on your body, which would be on your wrists, your elbows, your shoulders, everything like that. So we assumed that the faster, and a lot of people think this, the faster you swing something, the more torque is required. That's true until you start changing the weights. So for speed toe at 140 grams, even though you're supposed to swing at 7 miles an hour faster than your driver, it actually requires less force, and in parts put less force in your body than even swinging your own driver. So it's safer to swing a speed toad than swing a dry driver just by itself. Now, once you go heavier, even though you're swinging it slower, it requires a lot more torque, which puts more force in your body. Once you start multiplying those swings across multiple sessions per week, multiple sessions per month, that really starts building, which is why a lot of people end up getting injured speed training. It's not actually swinging faster. It's not speed training. It's the overweight aspect that's just putting too much wear and tear on your body. So that's the second reason. And the third reason.
Sam has wrote an awesome blog on our website, which actually calculates the Newton meters of force at each speed and weight level. Sorry to interject, but really cool. It's a good blog.
Yeah, if you want the actual science behind it and not just take my word for it, we got all the numbers on our website. And the third reason is it's actually slow training. So this kind of goes into nervous system training. Is your nervous system is either training to move faster or it's training to move slower. So anytime you do anything that's slower than actually swinging faster, your body is telling your nervous system, hey, it's okay, let's move slower. So even if it's really hard, you're struggling to swing those heavy training aids, you're really only telling your nervous system to move slower. You always need to be telling it to move faster, which is why we kicked out heavy overweight options.
You know, the timing piece, one, I know the stack is 41 and a half inches long. It's 4 inches shorter than the average driver at 45 and a half, which, you know, we talked about the timing at the top and differences there. But one thing that you said earlier that caught my eye was, you know, you're 6'3", 205 pounds. You can dunk a basketball. You're an athletic dude. You're strong. But you, like you said, your swing speeds aren't quite where you think they should be. And especially when you put the light options of this stack, you were you weren't where the heavy options were in terms of performance. And that really starts getting into the difference between strength and speed. You know, and your example is perfect to highlight that, where when you went light, you weren't swinging it as fast as the heavy options. You're strong, but not quite as fast. The flip side of that, I'll use, we've been using Minwoo Lee as an example. The guy is 6 foot, 165 pounds. And I mean, who knows what he does in the weight room, but his build doesn't speak to me like he's bench pressing a ton and he's squatting a ton. He's a pretty skinny guy. But the guy cruises. When he won that tournament on Sunday, every ball was 194, 194, 194. That is the flip side of he's extremely fast, but probably not necessarily the strongest human on the PGA Tour. And so in speed training, we're trying to move fast. We're not necessarily trying to get stronger. And so when we swing something heavy, Sam talked about the big muscles it's incorporating, et cetera. We want to teach our body to move fast. We don't want to reinforce it to move slower.
Interesting. A question about training the central nervous system versus training muscles, and maybe just terminology. I'm not a sports science or any type of science major, so everything I know is bro science. And that's my limitation. So as I understand it, with muscles generally, you have type 1, which is our slow twitch. You have type 2, which are fast twitch. Both of those are essentially you're born with a certain amount, or at least a proclivity towards. And you have what I would call type 2A or type 2, maybe there's special X. Yeah, that they could be either one. They can gravitate either way. So if you focus on essentially moving slower, those ones will respond and adapt to have those capacities. And if you are focusing on moving faster, then they will adapt and respond and have those types of capacities. What's the difference between training my central nervous system versus training some speed in some other way where it causes my type 2X to be more like type 2? And if I got the science wrong, let me know.
I'm going to go get a cheeseburger and let Sam take care of that one.
Finally, I get to use my degree to talk about golf. No, so what you're kind of talking about is the slow twitch muscle fibers, just for everybody listening, which is called slow twitch and fast twitch to make it easy. Slow twitch muscle fibers are definitely like marathon runners. Those are going to be your slow twitch muscle fibers that are used for a very, very long period of time. Bryce used to run marathons. He was training his slow twitch muscle fibers. That means he had a lot of slow twitch muscle fibers and was good at using his slow twitch muscle fibers. But notice how he can also swing 226 mile per hour ball speed. So it's not like you can be super dominant in one and shuts off the other. Ultimately, the nervous system controls all responses. So your nervous system is telling your muscle fibers, whichever ones they are, to actually fire. So instead of necessarily training those, and we'll go actually, let me back up for a sec, in the gym when you're training. If you're benching 150 pounds, if you're benching 95 pounds, if you're benching 250 pounds, you're using fast twitch muscle fibers because they're activating quickly and moving fast. They're not moving for a long period of time. So whatever you're doing in the gym, for the most part, if it's not cardio, you're pretty much activating your fast twitch muscle fibers, unless you're doing sets of 100, but I digress. So regardless of that, you're still training that muscle fiber. So now we've trained those muscle fibers, whether you're training for strength, power, anything. The differentiator is your nervous system and how fast your nervous system is trying to get those fast twitch muscle fibers to actually fire. Because if your fast twitch or if your central nervous system can only tell your muscle to fire, just say at 1 meter per second, and just I'm just throwing out a random number of distance, well, it can only fire that much distance. But if you, and maybe that's a jump, but if your nervous system can tell that muscle to fire faster, quicker, well, then you can obviously move a further distance. So that's where it's nervous system controls all activation of your muscle fibers, including fast twitch, no matter how those fast twitch are trained.
And one thing Sam talks about is, let's say we're doing box jumps as fast as we can, or med ball throws up against the wall as fast as we can. Sam, let me know if I butcher this, but when you do that, you're still moving slower than a 120 mile an hour golf swing. And so therefore, translating it to a faster swing doesn't, Sam, finish my sentence here.
Yeah, it's not going to translate as well. Anything you do in the gym primarily, it's good for strength. It's good for staying healthy. It's not going to necessarily make you faster because you're just telling your nervous system to get your muscles firing that specific speed. So if you get stronger on the bench and you go from benching 250 to 275 to 300 or whatever those numbers are, you're training your muscles to move that weight slowly. It's still fast twitch muscle fibers, but your central nervous system isn't trying to get it to move quicker and quicker and quicker. So this is back to the same example of what I was talking about earlier of Olympic sprinters. Olympic sprinters all the time in the 80s and 90s would throw a parachute on their back and sprint as fast as they could. And it'd feel harder. They would be working harder. They'd be working their muscles harder, but then they weren't getting any faster. And it's because even though they were working harder, their body wasn't used to moving faster. Now they sprint with assisted bands, so the band's actually pulling them on overspeed treadmills or down a hill. For most people, say you sprint all the time with a parachute on your back, and then you start running down a hill. You're going to fall flat on your face because your muscles and body can't move that quickly. Well, that's your nervous system controlling how fast your muscles can actually move. Not, it doesn't have anything to do with strength. Doesn't have anything to do with how slow you were training, all that. It's just your body can't move that fast. So now when you're trying to get your body to move that fast, you're able to actually move that fast. It's the old expression of if you want to swing faster, swing faster. That's what overspeed training is and where your nervous system comes in when it comes to type 1 and type 2 muscle fibers.
Got it. Got it. And so the general adage, I have a question about the sprinting because we're actually talking, I'm going to get to it on the next one, but we were actually talking with Jack Smith on Sunday, who I think is number 2 right now.
And after, number 1 actually just jumped up to number 1 about like 30 minutes ago. So perfect. Shout out Jack Smith.
I heard he might be number 1 soon. So that's really good timing. Bottom right before the top that you could ever get to. So we were talking with him the other day and I asked afterwards, I was busy so I couldn't talk about it more, but one of the things I was interested in was sprinting training. But I need to get back to my other line of thought, otherwise I'll lose it. One of the things that we've thought, or one of the ways that it's been described, is that working out increases like your muscle base. And I've heard this not just in speed training, but in a couple different areas, including like for dunking, we're increasing with hypertrophy. We're increasing our muscles' capacity. While I might be bench pressing more and getting stronger and a little bit slower in how I'm using my muscles in some ways, I'm developing more type 2X fibers, call it. Again, maybe I'm wrong there, but I'm building more of those and then more fast twitch. And then as I work on my central nervous system, I can take that larger capacity and get that larger capacity to move faster, which provides more speed. Is that accurate? How would you look at the overlap of working out, creating a larger muscle base, and then the central nervous system or the speed training activating the central nervous system to get that muscle base to move?
This is where it's very sport dependent. So I'll answer this in a few different ways. One way is when you're talking about jumping, absolutely. Getting stronger is going to give your legs more root strength to then get your nervous system to get used to moving quicker and faster so you can jump higher. That totally applies. Your body weighs a certain amount.
You're lifting 200 pounds or however much you weigh. That's a lot of weight to get going up.
Yeah. And Bryce knows exactly where I'm going with this. So in golf, the golf club isn't super, super light. Like we're weighing that in grams. So there's not a lot of muscle that's actually being used in the golf swing. Obviously, your skeletal muscle is being used. But what I mean is there's not a lot of muscle contractions. Whereas in the jump, it's inherently a smaller squat and you're really firing your quads. In the golf swing, yes, you're using every single different muscle in your body. You're using your lats, you're using your shoulders, you're using your delts, you're using your triceps, you're using your chest. But for instance, there's not a lot of chest activation in the golf swing. And the more chest activation you actually have in the golf swing would mean more over the top, because now you're using your bigger muscles to control it, which limits your ability to swing it faster. So this is where strength in the gym doesn't necessarily equate to being able to swing faster. The aspect of base strength, though, that's where it's very important. Like there is a certain amount of base strength that you need to have to swing certain speeds. For instance, if you can't lift a barbell in the gym, you probably need some more base strength to be able to swing faster, because if you are swinging faster anyways, you're going to end up hurting yourself. So obviously the gym is very, very, very important for staying healthy, because the faster you swing, still it's more taxing on your body. We need to make sure our joints, ligaments, tendons, muscles are all prepared to handle that stress. But if you can bench 250 pounds, being able to bench 275, 300, 350 is not going to lead to any more speed potential in golf.
The general consensus in the golf world overestimates what that level of base strength is in terms of needing to swing faster. To go back to Minwoo Lee, I'm not picking on him, but he's a pretty skinny dude. But to use me, I'm embarrassed to say this. When I hit my fastest ball speed north of 220, I could not, I still can't, I could not do more than probably 20 push-ups in succession. Again, embarrassed to say it, but I did two sets of 10 push-ups 3 to 4 times a week to keep my shoulders healthy along with other lightweight stuff. The heaviest thing I lifted was a 45-pound barbell to do forearm curls to keep my elbows and wrists healthy. So to swing at those speeds and literally not be able to do more than 20 push-ups is kind of counterintuitive, but I had that base level, and all I had to do was make sure my joints and ligaments and muscles stayed healthy while speed training to continue adding speed. I still am on the same workout program. It's like I feel like it's a 60-year-old old man training program, flopping around on my floor. But that's all I do to make sure I'm healthy enough to play golf, and I'm on the course at 192 ball speed.
My favorite thing to talk about, Chris, favorite thing to talk about when it comes to gym strength versus golf speed is the difference between, is there somebody who's weaker than you who can swing faster than you? If the answer is yes, then why is finding more strength in the gym the answer? It's in the nervous system. Their nervous system can just fire faster, so you need to train your nervous system more. So for instance, if I can bench, just say, 150 pounds and Bryce can bench 250 pounds, but I'm 20 miles an hour faster than him, him getting stronger on the bench is not going to help at all his golf speeds. He has to figure out what else is there. And that's where, like, I'm proud to say for breaking the world record for ball and club speed, I've set that base of, hey, here's this base of strength. If you're stronger than me in the gym, there is no reason that you should be trying to get stronger in the gym to swing faster, because clearly you don't need that to even break the world records.
It's interesting that you noted how sprinters train earlier, because it's the same thing in prep for dunking. I couldn't dunk in high school. I could maybe do off one foot every now and then. And then college, same thing. And then finally I was fed up with it. So I was like, okay, surely I can figure out how to do this. And I used a guy's program. Every now and then you see all these jump programs, you don't know if it actually works or not. But I used Paul Faberitz out of California, his jump program. And some of it was technique. A lot of it was actually technique. But the interesting thing with some of the working out is the overspeed training you do for dunking. So certainly you're like lifting things, and you're lifting things fast a lot of times, depending on where you are in your cycle for the training. But also, like, I still do it every now and then. I'll do jumps and I take a really heavy band, like a strong band, put it on my pull-up bar, and then I'm jumping as high as I can while pulling up on it to get used to firing that fast. And between that and some mechanical between like the work I did there, which I already had the underlying muscle base for the most part, and some technique work that I figured out from just watching the videos, which honestly, frankly, it mirrors golf, the golf swing a ton, which is interesting in terms of the golf swing, like trying to create speed. You're getting your center of pressure right. You're getting your center of pressure then back to the left, creating a long moment arm, and that's how you're generating your speed. But as you're getting back left, it's not like as much a squatting motion down left and then back up. It's a lot more of a unweighting to the left. And it's the same thing in basketball dunking, going off 2 feet, your penultimate step. So say I'm dunking with where my left foot's going to be forward. I step forward my right foot, my penultimate, right before the final. And that step is supposed to be extra, like an extra long step. And what it does for me is it gets me low. So I take a long step and then my left side swings around kind of. And I'm able to be in a low posture. So I don't have to squat down and then squat up. I'm just already low. And then my left foot comes around. And really, the left foot just pushes up all if I'm dunking it. Left foot doesn't really do much more than that.
Sounds very timing specific, it sounds.
Yes, very much.
That's interesting. You know, on the fast twitch versus strong too, my favorite example is when we were 10 on the playground at recess, we all remember that one kid that ran by everybody playing soccer, right? He was faster. That kid was born with just crazy fast twitch muscle fibers. And to stick on, Minwoo Lee or a Jake Knapp, I bet those guys were born with amazing fast twitch muscle fibers. Luckily, though, if you weren't, and you want to swing faster, you know, overspeed training is basically training your nervous system to catch back up where those kids were that were just born with it.
And on your basketball example, I think that's a perfect example of where it really is sport specific. While all the principles are very similar, of a lot of people do plyometrics for golf to swing faster. Plyometrics are awesome in their own category, but your plyometrics are going to be a lot more beneficial in basketball than they are in golf. But even swing and rotational sports like baseball and golf need to be trained very, very differently. But a lot of people bucket them in that same category in the aspect of, well, it's rotation power. So the more power you have for rotation, the faster you have potential swing. But that's where baseball bat's heavier than the golf club. So you need a little bit more base strength in baseball to have more rotation power than you do in golf to swing faster. You need a little bit more nervous system in that.
And there's a 5-ounce baseball moving 100 miles an hour impacting your bat at a ton of force.
Mm-hmm. 100. That's interesting. How can I determine whether I have enough base strength for the swing speed that I want to have?
It's a great question. This is where we don't have specific numbers in general. It's very dependent on the person in general. But for the most part, if you can lift the bar, if you can do 20 squats, like those are the things that if you can do a lot of basic movements, you're better off training your nervous system. For just random base strengths, a lot of people, not us, have said 135 squat for men and you're good. Like that is it's one of those, it's not, we're not talking even body weight or squatting your body weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the general population in golf, especially, there are a significant amount of people that don't have that base strength, that they don't work out at all. They're very weak individuals. But there's also a very large portion of people who, while they don't work out all the time, so they think they need to get in the gym to lift and get stronger. It was called like guys with dad strength. Like they're strong enough. They got dad strength. Like they can pick up stuff. They're good. So I think it's more so like just random lifts of, if you have the ability to pick up and hold 50 pounds, then you're good. We're not talking deadlifting and repping out a bunch of stuff, but if you can hold 50 pound dumbbells, you're good. One of the best things for base strength is actually an age predictor. So there's an age predictor of, if you can hold your body weight for 60 seconds, just hold it. It's not necessarily like you just got to lift it up. And that can be on a trap bar or just with dumbbells or something. If you can hold your weight for 60 seconds, then you are a super healthy individual. That also leads to you having base strength. So that is kind of a good indicator, because grip strength is one of the best indicators of if you have overall strength. So I would say if you can hold your body weight for 60 seconds, you're good. For women, it's 80% of your body weight. That's the indicator of health. That's the indicator of base strength. And I would say that's probably a pretty good indicator if you have a base strength in the gym to swing faster.
I actually just made a post on my Instagram last week about this, and this will encourage you. So we're the same height. I'm 6'3". I'm 215 pounds, and that extra 10 pounds is not muscle. It's 38-year-old dad weight.
Lucky tall guys over here.
Yeah. But when I started speed training, my max ball speed was 184. Day one, I got January 3rd. I went to my club, got on their flight scope, 184. I was 6'3", 215 pounds. My peak speed was 226. On that day, I was 6'3", 215 pounds. I didn't add any more muscle. My body composition was probably a mirror image. So for you, you know, I know you have the base strength to go 135, 140 club speed. If you keep at it, I would bet $1,000 that you're betting, I would bet that you would hit 140 by the end of next year if you just kept trucking along.
Dang, yeah. It was one of those marks when I said, I was like, I know I probably can achieve it. I don't know if I will. And especially early on, like I made some progress, but like, man, if feels like I'm putting a lot of effort into doing this. And then with the speed toe training, I've only done 3 or 4 trainings now, and then I'll hit golf balls right after it. And I kind of organize my day all around it. I do it in the afternoon at like 2 or 3. Because I used to be a 5 a.m. I love working out in the morning. 5 a.m. workouts are my favorite. But if I was going to gain speed from everything I've read and talked with you guys, like, all right, I need to like completely adjust it. I need to do 2 to 3 p.m. Like, I can't, because the evening's a little too late for me. I need to do it like right around this time, and get as much as I can out of it. But every single time, it doesn't even feel like when I'm going that fast. Like when I set my first week record of 128.8, it felt like I was putting in so much effort into doing that. I think I fell over on that swing. I did fall over on that swing. And then these ones, it really hasn't felt as much like I'm like trying that hard as much as it's just better timing, better pressure shift for sure. I have a much better pressure shift than I did. So it's been interesting to see for you guys in your first, you guys play, you guys obviously hit the ball far. Do you guys play normal golf some at all?
So Bryce just retired from long drive to pursue amateur golf. So he's a plus handicap. He's a phenomenal golfer. I golfed in high school. I was a plus three handicap, had a scholarship to play college golf, was more interested in long drive. So I'll play like once a year now, but he's a good golfer.
I play all too often. I'll admit that on the internet, and my wife will clip that clip there and replay it for me. Luckily she's very supportive, but I try to drag Sam out to the golf course. I've given up almost, but I try to get him out there all the time, and I'll succeed once or twice a year.
That is awesome. Okay, so but you guys are familiar with it, especially Bryce. When it comes to the speed training, what technique changes did you make? So I'll get to the overall meta question and then maybe break down some things. I'm trying to understand the technique changes you guys that made that also helped you swing faster, whether they naturally occurred from using the speed toad or like body naturally figuring out, or whether there were specific things that you guys changed, and whether that translates over to regularly playing golf as opposed to just playing for speed. Because, you know, some guys who have a long drive swing, obviously how you, the longer your hand path, the more speed you can generate. And so a long hand path, as long as some of the other guys have it, is not always as desirable for playing normal golf. So now that I've launched a bunch of questions there, answer them in whatever order, however you please.
Let me jump first into the app real quick, because this is a cool thing of why in the app specifically we have multiple different swings that you're training with: step back, step forward, marathon, circle drill, half swings. These are all swings that we have strategically placed throughout the app. They're all training a specific thing in your swing to improve your ability to hit the ball further. So like step back is teaching you to load your trail side properly. The step forward is teaching you to get your front side a little bit earlier. Combining them is teaching you to be more athletic and utilize the ground. We have a lot of these built into the app. So inherently going through our program, you're going to learn to maximize ground reaction force, maximize speed in the correct slot in your swing, just by doing that without even having to think about it. And that leads to directly more speed on the course without having to have a longer hand path and have all these other issues. Go ahead, Bryce. Didn't mean to cut you off.
You first mentioned about whether that happens subtly, organically through the training, or if you consciously look at certain things and points in the swing. The answer is both. To Sam's point, as you go through the program, you're going to build a more efficient swing. You know, that said, if you send a video of your swing to me or Sam as a swing coach, we could probably expedite the process and say, yeah, hey, your timing here is you're losing energy. But it happens organically as you speed train. A better sequence swing is a faster swing. And so we use the radar when we do our speed toed swings. As Sam mentioned earlier, it's our feedback. So with the speed toed swing, if you see a speed jump, your brain consciously or subconsciously says, hey, that was a better sequence swing than my swing prior. Maybe you consciously say, yeah, I really loaded my front side better. Or maybe even you don't realize why, but your brain logs it. And over time, you build a better sequence golf swing. And I attribute that almost solely when I retired from long drive April of last year, so a little bit more than a year ago. My handicap was a 5. By September or October of last year, I was on the flip side of scratch. I attribute that because my swing was very efficient and well sequenced. All I had to do was get the short game dialed a little bit and work on some face control. And my swing was already well timed, which is a huge battle for golfers. So as you speed train, you build a better sequence swing. And you're going to see your dispersion because of it improve as well. I think I touched on all the questions, but what did I miss?
No. I think you touched on all of them as well. When it comes to the speed training and hitting golf balls, I know the program says you should, if you're going to hit golf balls, you should do it after your, I believe is what it says, you should do that right after you do your training session. It should hit 9 golf balls in three sets of 3 with 1 minute rest in between. When you guys were training for a long driver training to put on speed, what were your ball training sessions like?
So I'll let Sam get into that, but this is why I retired from it, because the program Sam was about to tell you made it so I couldn't. I'm fortunate enough to have a golf course here I can play at, and I couldn't play golf because the program that we were doing is so long drive specific. It basically, you know, it took all of my effort 7 days a week to train for it. But go ahead, Sam.
Yeah. So long drive training, we tried everything from hitting like 25 balls in a session to hitting, I think one time I ended up hitting 350 in a session. And that was at the time we were like, oh, the longer we warm up, the faster we are. So let's just warm up for 4 hours and then try to swing fast. That didn't work very well, just for the record. I was hurt for 3 weeks. So like, a lot of this was trial and error. We had two very different training philosophies on this. And it was more so just because Bryce is 10 years older than I am. So that leads into it a lot, is your ability to recover. I was hitting 3 times per week, hitting actual golf balls. On the back end of that session, for one of them, I would be primarily doing the speed toad. That would be like my overspeed session of fully rested. As we elongated the process and got a lot better and more dialed, it ended up becoming 2 times per week at the end. And Bryce was 1 time per week. So on Mondays, we would train together in my garage. We would both do our max effort. That's when we would hit golf balls. One of the things we would do primarily was really elongate that warm up, like I was talking about. It wasn't 4 hours, but there's a certain peak when speed training, and this is more long drive specific than anything, of where your muscles are fully warmed up and your nervous system is fully warmed up. Then you say go and swing as fast as you can. It's very easy to get your muscles warmed up fast and your nervous system hasn't caught up, so you'll be slower that day, or vice versa.
Like, you're warmed up. Your muscles are like, yeah, I'm ready to go. But you can't tell that your nervous system is a little bit behind.
Yeah, and vice versa. You can prep your nervous system really quickly by just swinging speed toad a couple of times, but then your muscles haven't had a chance to warm up. Your body temperature is not getting warm, and then all of a sudden you'll swing slower. And that's why we've had many sessions when trying to break the world record where one of those goes really well, but your ball counts are just off in the effort you're putting in too early in your session, and then all of a sudden you don't peak at the end. So that was very specific. Another thing that we did primarily was priming, which is something that nobody in normal golf knows about or talks about or ever does. And it's one of the facets in golf that could be used the most to have better tournament golf. And what I'm talking about when I'm talking about priming your nervous system is basically the day before a tournament, that night, all you have to do is swing the speed toad, which starts waking up your nervous system, swing it 3 to 5 times. Like, we would do this before a session, before the training session the next day. We would just prime our nervous system by moving. It's making it less sedentary. It's waking up your nervous system, but it's not fatiguing anything because it's such a little amount of swings. It's like 90% effort. Swing it 3 times, put it down. It feels like you did nothing. You're not fatigued the next day. But now your nervous system remembered moving fast the next day. So you'll be 2 to 3 miles an hour faster. So if you ever want to be faster on the golf course or in a tournament, or swing the same speed with less effort because your nervous system's firing better, that priming piece is something that a lot of people can do to play better golf. Basically, timing of it is big on the sessions. But to go back, because I don't think I fully answered your question earlier, how many balls do we hit in the session when we're training for long drive? We would typically warm up over the course of 100 balls, but this was very driver specific. So when I say over 100 balls, we're talking about my top club speed ever was 172.5 miles per hour. That's my world record club speed. My first swing of the day with a driver is 100 miles per hour. So I am swinging basically like it's a wedge. And the goal of that is just to start getting timing and loosen up your body as slow as possible to let your muscles get warm, to let your nervous system get warm. So we would have a specific set of, we would basically swing 10 swings before we jump speed. And then we would move 5 to 10 miles an hour up. And we keep just staggering that pace until we get up to that 100 ball count. So it would basically be, if you went to the range and you hit wedges before starting a ball speed session. That's what we were doing. But since we're so focused on peaking with driver, we would use driver because there's no point in us hitting a wedge. And then we'd usually run anywhere from 25 to 50 balls, max effort, all out. And that's pretty much what we would do for our sessions. So that warm-up piece, we can count it, we can't count it, whatever you want to do in that, but all-out swing, somewhere in that 25 to 50 max effort swings.
Is there a way to measure how like peaked your central nervous system is?
So the best way to kind of figure that, there's not like an inherent way to figure that out, but the best way that we found in training was how effort filled did it take to hit a certain number. So for us, great example of this is I had a couple of pieces where I'd usually get stuck for the day and it would feel really, really hard. And I know it's too early to push. So for instance, 150 club speed, that was always kind of a barrier for me during that day, even though I could swing a lot faster. But what we would do is stagger up like 142, 144, 146, 148. That first 150 club speed would feel horrible. And I would have to try almost, it felt like 100% effort a lot of times. And I know I'm not ready. So instead of staying there and just hammering away and away and away at it, we would drop back down to like 145, cruise there for five more. Then we go back to 150. Now all of a sudden it felt easier. So now I know my nervous system's a little bit more awake and we can start progressing again. Once you get to 155, did it happen again? If yes, drop back down to 152, 150, cruise a little bit more, let that nervous system go, and then you can come back up. Sometimes you can shortcut that by just grabbing speed toad and ripping a few swings. Now you peaked your nervous system and then you can go into it. But again, like in the long drive world, we were trying to elongate our sessions a little bit more than keep them short. So that's kind of where that ended up with.
Got it. And what is the effect of, so I'm trying to get faster, but I'm not swinging at max effort, like that 150 I drop or 155 I drop back down to 150 for a little bit. What is, I mean, that doesn't make me slower per se, even though my effort level isn't as high.
Talking for overall like progress.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why we'll count those as kind of warm-up swings. So inherently, it's more like a warm-up of if you're in the gym and you're squatting, you know, you're going to squat with your body weight first, then you're going to squat with the bar, then you're going to put 25s on, 45s, and all that. If one of those sets doesn't feel good that day, you should hit it again, and that's how you have the highest peak. That's similar to what we're doing. If something doesn't feel good, just drop back, swing a couple more times, then go back to it. The issue that you would arise is if you drop back down to a swing speed. Just say like, okay, your max is about one, you said 123. So say you get up to 119 that day and you're going pretty quick. And just say we're taking speed toad out of it. You're just doing all driver session or something. Say you get up to that 119, it's feeling pretty slow. Well, you'd be better off just dropping back down to 115 for 3 to 5 swings than going back up. That's not going to inherently make you slower those 3 swings because you're still going to have your full swing efforts. If you drop back down to 115 and stay there the whole day, well, now we're going to have a problem with your overall progress. But just taking a couple more extra reps of the slower speed, we can call it technique work. We like to do that of when we're warming up. Figure out where that speed's coming from. So this goes back to your question on the golf course, like where's the speed come from? It might be being a little bit wider. It might be putting a little bit more speed in the slot, making sure that you're actually getting it in the slot versus coming over the top. It might be working on rotation, shoulders, a little bit more ground reaction force. You can do that and try to maximize ground reaction force at that 115 with as little effort as possible. And then when you go back up, you can start putting in the effort. But it's a great way to add a little bit more technique work into it. And you can do that with face control or anything.
Got it. Got it. Are there any nutritional protocols you had during that time that you thought were beneficial?
Well, protocols versus doing it, that's a little different story. So obviously glycogen is super important when you're training because that's how you're going to have energy. So you need sugar. So when we're breaking records and doing all that stuff, albeit not healthy, so I'm caveating it with this, we would always burn out in the middle of session. So Bryce would catch me in the garage just pounding gummy bears for like 3 hours of training and just eating bags of those things and Swedish fish. Is that good? No, at all. Don't do that. But sometimes you just need a little bit of stuff. That Rice Krispie treats are really good for that too. Smarties, just anything that has a little bit of sugar. They have intra-workout drinks that have a little bit of sugar in them too. Outside of that, going into it, obviously there's importance of getting protein, importance of getting healthy fats, because that's going to help your hormones stay balanced. That's going to help with recovery. And then carbs are also very important when you try and have peak performance. So we're talking health and all that stuff. It's a different equation, but we're trying to maximize what we can do. So that means gummy bears and protein and healthy fats seem to be where we're at.
I believe like eating an apple, the sugar might release more slowly than a gummy bear. Did it need to be something like that?
Yeah. And that's ultimately where like Gatorade has those They have those intra-race chews that they have. It's a marathon runner type of thing. So every stop, every mile, they're popping something. But yeah, it has to be fast acting because you want to use that as an immediate source. You've already burned a lot of the glycogen out. So we want to replace that as quickly as possible. And that's what we're talking marathon runners do. Every mile, you're pounding something just to keep some sugar in your system because you're burning it. Very similar thing when you're doing speed training. If that process is longer than just, say, a half hour, when you're doing a speed toad session, there's no need for intra-workout sugars because it's quick enough for that. That's more for the long drive, trying to break records type of stuff.
Excellent. Okay, I think for our final question, it'll actually be a little unique given where we're at. So normally we ask if you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that be? And then sometimes for instructors, we say, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing, what would that one thing be? In this case, if you could go back to yourself, each of you, and tell yourself just one thing before you went on your speed journey, what would that be? And then besides using the speed toad, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing about gaining speed, what would that one thing be? We'll start with Sam.
If I could tell myself something, it would be that your own personal progress is not dependent on what other people say is the standard of progress. Because I experienced that a ton in long drive. Every time that I broke, I was the seventh guy to break 230. I was the second guy to break 240. Then I set the ball speed world record. That whole process starting from 215 to 220 was not supposed to happen and not supposed to happen that quickly. Because everybody says, oh, you can only gain a mile per hour per month, or you can only gain a mile per hour every 3 months. Oh, it's impossible to swing that fast. Your progress can't be determined by others.
And Sam's only 6 feet tall. Sam's only 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Like,
so
how many people are saying, no, you're not tall enough?
So that I would tell myself that, and I will continue to tell myself that every time, because if you let other people control your progress, your thoughts, your abilities, then you're in trouble because you're going to be limited by their mental capacity, basically. What I would tell junior golfers is also a big thing that I'm a big proponent of, which is be an athlete first, because too many young golfers get in this robotic swing of they have to have the perfect swing. They don't want to speed train. They want to do everything the correct way. And they get stuck in that. They don't optimally train their nervous system early. And then when they want to put on speed later, it starts messing up their robotic swing and all this different stuff. In a perfect world, the second a junior golfer starts picking up a adult driver, so that's like 12, they'll start using the same drivers, start over speed training, start being an athlete, try to swing fast, try to hit it further, because when they get to high school and it actually starts mattering more, they will have a better, more efficient swing for it. They can work on any technique changes that they need, but they have that high ceiling, so they'll play better golf throughout the rest of their career.
What I would have told myself was don't wait till you're 35 years old to start. So I played baseball through college, and then me and one of my old teammates, University of Washington, kind of picked up golf at like 24, 25. We played 2-3 times a month, as much as weather in Oregon would allow. And, you know, him and I both threw the baseball over 90 miles an hour. So we had some good fast twitch. We could hit the ball a long ways, but I didn't realize like what my potential could have been if I started, you know, speed training and doing that long drive when I was 25 instead of 35. Because, you know, as you get older, your nervous system slows down. And so it's that much harder to recover and get those peak speeds. So I'll always wonder how fast I could have been at, you know, 27, 28 years old. But just to echo Sam's comment, you know, my current ball speed peak would probably be like 205 to 210 right now. And so for me to hit a fairway at 190 mile an hour, I can execute a very short, abbreviated swing that's accurate for me and my level of golf at 190. I'm not swinging all out because my ceiling is 205 to 210. So just to Sam's same point, I would tell junior golfers, be athletic, raise your speed ceiling, because then freshman, sophomore, junior year of high school, when you're trying to score, you can execute as mechanical of a sound of a swing as you would like, and you will not have a distance disadvantage. In fact, you'll still have a distance advantage. I would say 8 out of 10 of my tee shots are with my quote unquote mini driver that's 43 inches and 13 degrees of loft. And my strokes gain app has me gaining 2 strokes around against PGA Tour average with a 43 inch driver at 13 degrees loft because it's so controlled, but my speeds are still adequate. So imagine the strokes gain that an elite golfer could pick up swinging such a short lofted driver, but still out driving the average PGA Tour player. Your accuracy, pops in, all because my speed ceiling is where it is.
Very interesting. Well, that's excellent advice. I recommend people to try out the Speed Dude. I've been impressed with it so far. I'm excited to see when it gets me to 130 and what that looks like. Where can people find you guys on social media, both Speed Toad and you guys individually? Where can they purchase Speed Toad? Give us a little bit of more information about Speed Toad, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, you can find the Speed Toad at thespeedtoad.com. We're Speed Toad on Instagram and TikTok. My personal Instagram is Dr. Sam Atanasio. You can check me out. And then Bryce.
Yeah, so my handle on YouTube and Instagram is Bryce Mooney Golf. And then YouTube Speed Toad is about a couple months ago, we started posting long form videos once a week on our Speed Toad YouTube channel. And it's really, really valuable information. It's really all these type of topics that we've jumped on podcasts about that we decide to drill down on for 4 to 8 minutes that help all things distance and golf related.
Yeah. And for any of your viewers, if they have any questions about stuff we've talked about, feel free to reach out to us or reach out to my personal Instagram. We love helping people gain speed. This is a passion of ours more so than happen to turn into a business, but this is a passion for both of us, gaining speed, playing golf, hitting the ball further.
That is awesome. Well, if you're listening to us right now on Spotify, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts, please like, subscribe, leave a rating. If you're trying to find us on Instagram, you can find us on Instagram at @TheTournamentCode. And on Twitter /X at @TournamentCode. As always, we appreciate you joining us and look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.